going on, y'all? And thank you again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting right beside me, hanging out today, is Mr. Kyle Filio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. It's a rainy day here in North Central Texas, but I'm enjoying it. I'm excited. We have two very special guests coming on today. We don't do interviews very often, but these guys are friends of ours. David Flora of Blurry Photos and Derek Hayes of Monsters Among Us are coming on to talk about their new feature-length film, Shadows in the Desert, High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle. Now, we've talked to them before, and that was before movie theater releases, but now it's going to be available for streaming, which means everybody out there listening, you can finally watch this thing, and it's going to be on like Apple TV and Amazon Prime, maybe some other services, but I know those for sure. And you got to check it out. If you're into the paranormal, like I know you are, that's why you're here, and you like strange stories you've probably never heard of before, because I never heard of any of these till talking to them. The Borrego Triangle is an area that they coined the phrase for. That's why you probably couldn't look it up. Or if you do Google it, it's just going to come right back to their documentary. But there's a lot of strange things out there, from orbs being seen, UFOs, ghosts, cryptids.
Your favorite, the straw man,
the Borrego Sandman. And, you know, skinwalkers and all types of strange things in that area. You know, like we talk in the interview, it's like there's certain points in the world that are just, for whatever reason, they're hot spots, right?
Mm-hmm.
For weird activities. I don't know if it's ley lines. I don't know if it's magnetic fields. I don't know what caused it, but there are certain areas where there just seems to be a lot of stuff going on. Skinwalker Ranch is one of them. The Bermuda Triangle is one of them. The Bridgewater Triangle is one of them. And then there's other places.
The area out there at Marfa for the Marfa Lights.
Yeah. Yeah. And out there where I used to hunt when I was a kid, there was a lot of strange stuff happening out there. I only saw the one thing, but other people that had been out there before had told me that they'd seen weird things. And I think there's places like that all over. And we just, for whatever reason, we just dismiss it. People are like, that's not real. But it is real. And that's what I like about it. Speaking of real, Cam.
Yes.
I got a pretty cool story, a pretty cool sighting.
Oh.
It says, the Monday before last, which I believe was the 19th, I was driving from the Noble Square area of Chicago, somewhat on the north side of the southwest side of the city, to stop by my parents' house. This was around noon, and I was getting onto I-94. The expressway at the Milwaukee on-ramp. I was cut off by a fire truck and ambulance as they were going to tend to an accident. And as such, I ended up sitting in the accident traffic, where I literally just sat there, put the car in park, and just waited. As I sat there, all of a sudden, there was this black, somewhat triangular, as if it was low, like a low pyramid. A low, wide pyramid. That's the only way I can describe it. This thing started hovering from the left of my view, which was near the skyline. It was over the expressway and eventually out of sight to the right. But it went back and forth quite a few times. I originally assumed that it was a kite or a strange-looking balloon. The kite part, though, just doesn't work because there was nowhere for someone to stand to be able to control it and fly the thing. Perhaps it was a kite that got away, but it was moving in a controlled fashion. It was completely black. I thought I noticed a glint of light off of it a couple of times, like it was something metallic, reflecting, which made me think it was perhaps Mylar. If it was just a Mylar balloon, but again, it was moving in such a controlled way. It really kind of started tripping me out. Of course, you can't really gauge size in situations like that. We know that, but it seemed huge, especially compared to some of the lake gulls or birds that were flying somewhat in the same vicinity. What really tripped me out, though, in the end, and this was a good 30 seconds of staring at this thing, maybe a little less than that, when I realized it was hovering right over the car accident. And with everything you hear about the Silver Bridge collapse and all the stuff that happened in Point Pleasant, it made the hair on my arms stand up. I'll be very honest, I don't know anything that was truly Mothman-ish, but I wonder if it wasn't a drone of some sort, and if it had more to do with the person or persons who have been hoaxing all of this. I really don't have any idea. I have absolutely no idea what I actually was, but it certainly did trip me out. To a degree, I consider myself a very rational person, a thoughtful person, and again, very skeptical. So I have trouble accepting that it was a flying humanoid cryptid hovering over an accident scene, but I don't know what to make of it, you know? I'm hoping that maybe somebody else has seen this, that somebody else has a conclusive explanation. It was right around probably 12:30 p.m. in the afternoon. It was pretty and sunny out, a very little bit of wind, which was an important fact to note. Again, very black with the possibility of a glint of light that was reflecting off of it as if it was something metallic, possibly. You know, something shiny was on it. When it caught the sun, it seemed to glint, at least twice that I noticed. And again, it was kind of a low, wide pyramid shape. I would hazard to guess that it was a balloon, but who knows? So, again, you get these stories, especially around Chicago. People will see these black pyramids. Like, what is that thing? Remember the Belgian wave? Mm-hmm. Those were all triangular-shaped craft. Perhaps that's what it was. Maybe it was watching the car accident that happened. Now, the person does admit that they don't know what it is, and they'd like to believe that it's a balloon, but yet you can tell by the way they wrote it, there's just that doubt in the back of your head. Yeah. Like, you ever try to rationalize something, but you deep down inside, you know the
truth. You're just trying to lie to yourself to make you feel better.
Exactly what it is. So, you know, look, there's been an uptick in UFO sightings, UAP sightings lately. It makes you want to know, like, what is really going on?
Well, I'll tell you what's going on from that story. That person right there just made your new D&D character's name.
What is it?
Moth Manish.
Okay.
Moth Manish. He's a detective. I can feel it. I have something unsettling. We're going to be discussing unsettling. Here we go. Excuse me, folks. Listen, you and y'all all know that Kyle and I love this not deer stuff. I got another one for you, Brad, that you're going to really find lovely. It says, I have a story about the not deer from two summers ago. I lived deep in the Appalachian Mountains in Tennessee at the time, unlike the foothills I'm in now. I was wandering in the woods, probably 2/3 of a mile from my house at this point, as one does when they live 2 miles down a twisting dirt road to the nearest town, about 30 minutes away from town, and I was about 30 minutes away from home when I heard brush moving. Now, I knew it was probably a harmless animal. I'm guessing possum, deer, maybe a little destructive rabbit, but I turned to look, and it was a deer. And it was about 30 feet away from me, but it was staring. Now, wild deer don't always stare at random people to begin with. They usually just run away. But this doe was breathing hard and making a low rumbling sound. I didn't really know what to do, and I hadn't really thought about the dangers of going near wild animals, even if they are harmless deer, so I just went towards her. I swear to God, this thing's eyes blanked out, and it took a couple of jerking steps forward. Moving very strange. Well, I flinched, and then she ran off to the side while staring at me until she was now about 50 feet away. It was deeply unsettling in the way that I can't explain. I know that the thing was not quite a deer, so I sprinted all the way back to my house. Now, I would say that the joints even went the wrong way. The bends were not where they were going to bend or should bend, and the shape of the face and the head was all wrong. It was more in the shape of a dog. It was just very odd looking, and the way it reacted to me was, well, frankly, very disturbing. I started to walk away, but the doe followed me. Followed me for about 2 miles on the trail. It stayed at that distance of about 50 feet, and then after about 45 minutes of this, she suddenly just vanished. She was gone. I have family that still live in the mountains, and they've described a variety of strange things. But the not deer is one phenomenon that even they don't like to discuss.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
Again, everybody, you know, we always talk about this. Everybody's like, well, that's just simple. It's CWD, right? That's what's causing it. But these don't really sound like it. Of course, I don't know enough about it, but does CWD make your head look like a dog's? Makes a deer head look dog headish?
Yeah, for those that don't know what CWD is, tell them what you're talking about.
It's chronic wasting disease, and it affects their nervous system. It affects a lot of things. And when you see deer with it, it's awful. It's a terrible, terrible disease. But they don't necessarily act the way some of these have been described acting. Of course, we already know, too, you know, not everybody has the same reaction to certain foods or medicines. So maybe it affects different deer completely differently. I do not know. But it just, on the whole, it doesn't sound like a side effect of CWD when these people report these creepy not deer sightings.
Yeah, it is creepy. Speaking of creepy, check this out.
Lay it on me.
I live in the Navajo Nation in Arizona. Can't we've been there?
Heck yeah.
This took place in the Chuska Mountains in the 1980s. My friend was about 6 years old and was up in the mountains for a family reunion at the family cabin. Now, the cabin is in a meadow with a stone wall, stone well near the tree line. They spent the day doing typical reunion things, i.e. three-legged races, flag football, and whatnot. The sun starts setting and the families retire to the cabin and call it a day. The older people plan to sleep in the two bedrooms and the kids would sleep on a bed cot set that was all set up in the living room, as well as the kids were tucked into bed. My friend, let's call her Sandra, is uneasy and reluctant to go to sleep. She is wide awake as everyone falls asleep. Sandra tosses and turns, unable to shake her weird feeling. Suddenly, her feeling turns immediately to fear as she hears something big, something heavy, making its way across the porch. Now, Sandra fears that it might be a bear looking for food. Little did she know, it would be much, much worse. She could make out the shadow of something large and black as it passed the window. It is making its way towards the door. She sees that the family didn't lock the door. Sandra is watching the door, too scared to move or scream. She sees the doorknob begin to rattle back and forth. Whatever it is, it's trying to open the door. And it succeeds. The room floods with the most putrid stench, and she sees a large human hand through the door. Sandra finally summons her strength to scream, and she did. Dad! Her father runs in and sees Sandra pointing at the door. He sees the hand, runs to the doors, and yells, "Hank!" His brother, "Grab the gun!" Whatever it was at the door, well, it ran. It was a full moon, and in the moonlight, they saw the creature run across the yard. Hank, with his hunting rifle in hand, looks through his scope and sees the creature crouching behind the well. Sandra's father assumes that it's a bear and tells Hank to shoot. Hank pulls the trigger and hears the bullet ricochet off the well. All thought of this being as a bear is diminished instantly when the creature stands up on 2 feet and ran towards the tree line. They never saw the creature or anything like that ever again. Oh. Wow, this thing was trying to break into their cabin.
Wow.
You know, this is something you've heard about in lots of... I mean, remember, what's the Boggy Creek movie? Remember its hands coming through the screen window and stuff?
But look, if a bear will break into a cabin, why wouldn't Bigfoot? He can still smell that you got sugar or Little Debbie's or whatever else you're keeping hidden in there. Maybe they just want some.
Yeah, you should leave...
Jack's Links.
Leave some snacks out for him. You know, you need to throw some apples out there.
A gifting tree or a gifting log or a gifting stump or whatever they call it. That's what you need to give them.
Yeah, no, there's been...
So he doesn't pull your arms off later.
Reportedly, there's a lot of people that do that. I've left stuff out, but I always assumed it was raccoons or possums or something like that. Not
for you. That's probably what it was. Sasquatch doesn't want to be friends with you.
I don't want to be friends with them. I just don't want them to hurt me.
Give him whatever you need.
My version of Sasquatch, remember, is the tree loving.
That's true. Yeah,
the hippie
Harry Sasquatch. From Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah. That's what I like to believe. He's only mean when people shoot at him.
Yeah,
you know, throw rocks at him. Yeah, that's when they get mad. They see you throw a candy wrapper on the ground. They're ill-tempered.
Curious, yes.
Right? They're
but otherwise easygoing.
Of the forest. Yeah, otherwise very easygoing. Speaking of easygoing, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to be talking to David Flora and Derek Hayes about their new film, Shadows in the Desert. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. everybody. We got a special group of guys we're going to be talking to today. Good friends of ours. We'd like you to introduce to you, just in case you're not aware. David Flora and Derek Hayes have recently went out in the heat and got out in the middle of the desert and filmed a documentary that I think that you're going to enjoy. It's called Shadows in the Desert, High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle. It's an excellent watch. It's full of mystery. There's things like phenomenon, including like cryptids and disappearances and ghosts and UFOs, everything you like to hear and watch. That's what they do. So introducing you, just in case you don't know who they are, Derek and David, how's it going?
What's up, guys?
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Good to be back here.
In case you're living under a rock and you don't know who these guys are, kind of tell our audience who you are and about your shows and about yourself and what got you started with this whole project.
Well, my name is Derek Hayes, and I'm normally the host of Monsters Among Us podcast, a call-in show about monsters. But David and myself joined forces for this little project, and I'll let him cover that once we learn who he is.
Yeah, and if you guys listen to Cam and Kyle for a while, you know my voice, at least from a while back, because I host Blurry Photos. We've had a couple crossovers, and always good to talk to you guys. And Derek hit me up one time when I was doing a miscrypted contest for my show and said, why don't you do one on the Borrego Sandman? And little did I know, he was planting the seed to haul me out to the desert and see if I could help him survive out there for a documentary.
Leave him for dead out there.
Well, it's an interesting documentary. And, you know, we've covered lots of strange places like the Bermuda Triangle, the Bridgewater Triangle. But I wasn't really familiar with the Borrego Triangle. Why don't you tell everybody, like, what is this place? How did it come about? How did you guys discover it? And what made you want to delve into researching that area?
Well, you hadn't heard of it because we made it up.
Oh,
essentially.
Well, good reason.
We didn't make up the triangle. We just sort of stumbled upon all this activity.
Coined the term is what Derek's
coined the term. That's what for. That's what I'm trying to
that's
say.
That's the professional.
We made it up. What my wife and I discovered at camping out in this area years and years ago was that there are all these stories and there's no outlet for them. You know, there's no documentaries, there's no books, you know, there's nobody really talking about all this stuff going on out there. So the idea started brewing and I got David on board and we decided we're going to do, you know, a documentary with this. So, you know, that's sort of what got us out there. And then once we were there, we sort of started pinpointing all this activity and it sort of made the shape of, you know, the classic triangle that you get in a lot of these window areas. So, of course, we had to come up with a clever name for it. So that's what I mean by made it up. We made up the title of the area.
Right.
But the activity is very real and has nothing to do with us.
Well, for those that are interested, where is the Anzo Borrego Triangle? Where is this located?
It is east of San Diego. It's the largest state park in California. How many total square miles is it, Derek?
The triangle itself is 1,600. The park is just a little less than that.
So it encompasses most of this park that's about the size of the state of Rhode Island. And it's basically the triangle itself touches the border of Mexico. And Interstate 8 runs down through there. And then it goes all the way up to Anza in the north side of the triangle. And one of the points is around Hemet. Idlewild's not too far away from there. And then the eastern point of it touches the Salton Sea, which is all of it's just south of Palm Springs out there.
Yeah, it's a bizarre area. It kind of reminds me of these special places on the earth. I don't know whether it's ley lines or what causes it, but it reminds me of like Skinwalker Ranch or the Zone of Silence, you know, south of there in Mexico. There seems like there's these hot spots for whatever reason. And there's a lot of paranormal activity following the whole gambit, like from strange orbs being seen in the skies to stories of ghosts to cryptids, skinwalkers, you name it. When you were out there, what was something that you guys experienced while you were there? I know that in the documentary, you're walking around at night and things like that. Tell us something that stood out as very interesting to you while you were there.
Well, this is a story that frustrates a lot of would-be watchers, I think. But we actually saw a UFO while we were out there and got it on camera. And believe it or not, it didn't make it into the documentary.
Oh, tell us more.
Yeah, weird, I know. Well, we were headed back. I think it was the Bigfoot night. We were doing the Bigfoot investigation, and we popped over the ridge, headed back into Borrego Springs, which is sort of like the only town, really, in the triangle, at least in that part of the triangle. And we come over the ridge, and there in the distance, you could see, well, if it wasn't dark, you could see the Salton Sea out there. And we saw, I don't know, five or six balls of glowing orange light that were hovering over what looked like the sea out there. And they were maybe reflecting off the water because it looked like there was 10 or 12 of them, but it just looked like a reflection. And if you've seen the 29 Palms video that came out, I think last summer, it was very reminiscent of that, the way it looked. So we stood there for a few minutes, you know, kind of guessing, what could this be? You know, what is this? And we shot some pretty bad footage of it. We didn't have the right equipment. It was pretty far away. And then we just got back in the car and we went on our business. But the problem is, once we started editing, this was all by itself. We had nowhere to put this footage, organically anyway, so that it sort of made sense. So David and I decided we're just going to hang on to it. We're going to see what happens. And believe it or not, we're actually going to show everybody this footage by the end of the year. We're legally not allowed to explain how or why, but you guys will see the footage at some point.
That's amazing. It seems like there's been a lot of UFO activity, UAP activity ramping up all over the media recently. And, you know, makes you wonder, is the sightings and stuff happening more frequently? Is it ramping up, or are they just releasing it more often? Or is it all just a big distraction to get us to look at something different? But yes, I do remember the 29 Palms videos. That is cool. I've never seen anything in person like that. But I've always wanted to. I think those things are 100% real. I think that they may have been here for a long time, but they are definitely here. One thing I would not like to see is the Borrego Sandman. Now, when you look at the area, and this is something that comes up on our show all the time, is, you know, there's Sasquatch or these Bigfoot or whatever you want to call them, sightings in areas that it doesn't make sense for them to be in. Like an animal that large, if it's physical, it doesn't seem like there's enough food in that area to support something of that size. Yet, there's a long history of sightings in the desert, and especially in California, of people seeing these large, hairy hominids. I mean, there was even like I don't remember where exactly it was, but there was like a racetrack, like a drag strip somewhere, and there was people that were, you know, out there enjoying a Saturday night race, and there were several sightings of this Bigfoot-like creature that was out there. Can you tell us a little bit about, without giving away too much from the documentary, about this Borrego Sandman?
Yeah, there's a 1964 Desert Magazine article is one of the main sources of this lore and info that you can still find. In fact, Derek and I both have a copy of it. Now, one of which we received in the film, which is fun. And it detailed this ex-Marine's travels out there in the desert where he claimed to have maybe caught a glimpse of it from the sky on a flyby and maybe got a foot cast of it, a footprint. And then there was also like some rustling and some tamarisk groves and stuff like that, that he attested to in this article. So there, that was in 1964. There's been, sightings of Sasquatch, you know, all around that area going back to, basically the Native Americans that live out there, and possibly tying into some rock art that, we bring up in the picture. And then, there's just sightings, five to 10 years ago, because one of our witnesses had one cross the road while she was driving. And so it's a hotspot. It's active for sure.
Yeah. It just seems bizarre. It seems like an odd location for something like that to exist in, because you always think of Sasquatch or Yeti or whatever living in a thick forest of the Pacific Northwest or, you know, eastern Texas where there's a lot of trees. You just don't think about them being in the desert, yet there are sightings there. Not just there, in other areas that it doesn't seem like there should be something like that, but yet there is, and that's what I find interesting.
I got a question for you guys. So when you first dropped the film
and it was to all the supporters. There was such a buzz that then you started bringing it into theaters. And y'all had several theater screenings, and people were swarming it to see all this. During that time, did you get any more stories? Did you get people coming forward to tell you things? Because that's always the way it works. They've had all this time in the world, but then it's like, boom, now they're here. Yep. You're like, what? And it's some of the greatest stuff that you never expected to find. Did you get some of those in all of these things?
I'll tell you, we did a premiere for the film in Idlewild, which is really close to the northern point of the Triangle. And there's a little tiny mountain theater up there. This is, I think it's 7,000 feet or something like that. So it's way up there in the pine forest. And there's this little movie theater there that we did this event at. And I think we had, I misspoke before and said there was 400 people, but I think there was 200 people that attended the event, misspoke on a previous engagement.
Anyway, there were about 5,000 people that came, you guys.
There's a million people that
yeah,
came.
It was amazing. Million.
Minimum million.
Cops were everywhere. It was chaos.
It was a mess. But the point being, after the premiere, we did a Q&A, and everybody stood up and had some sort of encounter or heard some story from this area. They really started to come out of the woodwork at that point. And, you know, of course, David and I look at each other like, well, you know, where was all this a year and a half ago when we were shooting? But, you know, there's material there for a sequel at the very least. But yeah, we're definitely getting these stories trickling in. We've both been back to the Triangle since and experienced strange activity there that, again, we're not allowed to speak about, very clandestine. But yeah, the stories are coming in. And I imagine when this is released streaming, you know, and everybody can get their hands on it, that they're really going to start to flow in because there's a lot of activity reported down there.
That was my next question is like, are you prepared for the wave that's going to hit whenever people watch it and be like, oh, I guess I'm going to go ahead and send them my story. I'm going to call it in. I'm going to do it's might be a massive influx of other things that you're going to find because just like Kyle pointed out, and like y'all have done with this, this is something that nobody really talked about outside of the locals. Nobody really brought any of this up. Like it was just
that'd
like
be a good problem to have for sure. Yeah. If that does happen.
And it's just boom. Now everybody's talking and wanting to know what's going on out there. It's such a weird thing. You're talking about streaming, folks. Look, March 5th, it's coming. March 5th, it's going to land. Y'all are going to be able to stream it. It's going to be great. You can be able to find it basically anywhere. And this is one that you have to see. Now, I know I always go crazy with this whole thing, but the Viking ship. This might be my absolute favorite thing ever. The movie Sahara, it always brings that back to mind when they find the old Confederate ship up there in the sand dunes or whatnot. So just a little info on the Viking ship, please, guys.
Well, truth be told, that's actually outside the Triangle. We debated whether or not to make it big enough to encompass that legend, but the Triangle would have been the size of like Ohio or something ridiculous. That said, it's still in that same valley, still in that same basin there. And essentially what it is 200-300 years ago, the area where the Salton Sea is now would have been an inland sea connected to the Sea of Cortez down in Mexico. And what the rumor is that not once, but twice, two different ships sailed up in there. And then I guess the tide was pretty drastic in that area and they would get hung up. You know, there's a mooring, I guess is maybe the word for it, but they would get stuck on the sand and, you know, they wouldn't be able to get their way out of there. And that there's a Viking ship that met that fate and also some sort of Spanish galleon, I guess, maybe some sort of Spanish ship that was full of gold, supposedly, or pearls. I'd actually heard at one other point. But the story is that both of these ships got shipwrecked back here and the water descended and they were stuck. Essentially, they had to walk out of there if they got out at all. And the ships then disintegrated into the desert, but remnants could still be found. And there's rock art in that area that seems to depict exactly that, some sort of Spanish galleon. You could see the sails and everything on it. And this is what, David, 300, 250 miles inland, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So there shouldn't be a lot of context of Spanish galleons
to sailing ships
aren't that old. Yeah. To sailing ships. Exactly. So there may be a little credence lend there. And people have reported to have found parts of this ship. There was one gentleman, I can't think of where, I think he might've been in the Brawley area, which is a little southwest of the Triangle, but I think he found the there's a word for them, but the ribs of the boat itself, and he turned it into a chicken coop or something like that.
Oh.
These timbers that are massive, and that you just repurposed it because that's what you do in the desert.
Yeah.
Thinking nothing of it. And, you know, of course, it's all long gone, burned down or something along those lines. But the story persists, and there's people that go out looking for this. I've done it myself, gone out a couple times in places. I thought, oh, maybe it'd be in this area, and I kind of go poke around and kick some rocks and look for it.
Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that lends credence to this is that I think, you know, hundreds of years ago, it was basically that you could get from Baja, the Baja area of Mexico, all the way up to, I don't know, maybe like LA area. Like the water ran in through this area to where ships could basically do a shortcut to get through there. And then eventually all that water kind of receded and dried out and all that. And that's why you have, you know, this big expanse of desert and stuff. So, you know, it is not beyond the realm of possibility that some ships could have gone up in there and it was already too shallow. They didn't know and they got stuck and, you know, there you go.
And it would make sense to, because of, I just thinking now about what you found in the triangle, trying to walk out of that area. Like not being from that area. Now you're stranded.
It was hard enough to walk from the house to the car.
Right.
In that area. And it was parked, you know, 10 feet away. So
just thinking about those guys, just everybody in there, like having to abandon that ship and walk because you don't, you know, that's miles and miles inland now. And if the desert didn't kill you, then whatever was in the triangle might have added to some more of it. Like, to me, that makes like a great movie, right? Like a bunch of lost Vikings in the triangle dealing with whatever's going on in there would be an outstanding film.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
picking them off one by one.
Yeah. They're trying. Yes. It would be great.
Yeah. I mean, the location is a very harsh environment, especially in the summer.
Oh,
I mean, I'm sure even at night, it's probably 98 degrees, you know.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll give you a little anecdote here. It was 122 most of the days we were shooting because we lived through it. And we stayed in an Airbnb with air conditioning, which was great.
No, there it's just called a B&B.
Yeah.
Hot Airbnb.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly. Anyway, they had an air conditioner there that would only go down to 82 or as high as 82 or whatever. You couldn't get any cooler than that. So we would get out of the 122 degree heat into the house where it was 82 degrees and it just felt like the Arctic. It was the craziest thing. And if it's 82, I mean, that's pretty warm for being inside a house.
Golly.
It felt amazing.
Yeah. Especially for you boys. You boys are both living in the mountainous areas, right? So
yeah,
you're not used to the hot climate.
Yeah.
Look, it gets hot here in Texas, but it doesn't get that hot.
No,
I can't imagine.
That's insane.
You know, one of my favorite stories in the documentary is I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but the Yaqui Well.
Yaqui Well.
And, you know, there's legends out there that on warm summer nights, you know, especially when the moon is full, that you can see these three ghostly figures dancing around the well. Can you tell us a little bit about that cool story, that legend?
Sure. This is a story from probably the mid to late 1800s. Of course, they had stagecoach lines running through there. Not many, you know, because it's the desert. It's not an easy path, but they would follow the natural springs and sources of water. And one of these was called Yaqui Well. And Yaqui is a Native American tribe. And it was so named because they had some Yaqui Native Americans dig this along this stagecoach line. And there's a legend that there were these three guys that came from somewhere east and south, maybe coming up through Mexico, maybe coming from Yuma, Arizona, going up to, you know, San Diego, Sacramento, all the way up to Sacramento. These three guys, which, you know, they could have been just buddies, they could have been brothers, they found this well. And after going through the desert for who knows how long, they see water and they just kind of go crazy. One of them just basically engulfs himself in the water and drinks it. He died quickly because that the rapid swelling of cells with the water with a sudden water intake like that, especially if you do a lot at a time, that really messes up your blood cells and can cause brain swelling and is very fatal. And so they say he died. The other guys, you know, picked his pockets because why leave a good, you know, corpse to waste? You guys know D&D times.
You got to loot them.
He finds a gold nugget, one of the two remaining guys, and then the other guy sees it and a brawl breaks out. They fight each other and one of the guys kills the second guy. And so one of the three dudes survives, ran off in the desert, never seen again. And people say, you know, sometimes when you're out there, you can catch a glimpse of this fight that happens. So that was one of the cooler kind of old West stories from this. We got to go to, you can actually walk right up to the well. It's not hard to get to. And we were out there poking around, brought out some instruments like EMF meter, cameras, different thermal flares, all kinds of stuff. We did a little ghost investigation there. So it was a fun time.
Yeah, you guys actually felt some like cold pockets of air out there in the heat. So it's interesting to watch those kind of things. Whenever those ghost type movies or television shows come on, I typically leave the room. That stuff freaks me out because, like we always talk about in the show, it's easy to avoid Bigfoot. You just don't go out into the woods. But like ghosts, you can't really run from them. They can walk through walls, go through floors. They mess up your kitchen. They pester you.
With Terminator.
Yeah. So I have been invited on several ghost hunting tours, and I've always turned that stuff down. I don't want something attaching itself to me. Me bringing it home, I got enough problems at my house with my cats and my kids and my wife already. I don't need paranormal ghosts messing with me, too.
You've got enough attached as it is.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, you guys had mentioned that you got a lot more stuff now. So are there plans of making a sequel to this?
I think we're open to it. It's going to, you know, depend on how well this is received. Of course, you know, if everybody hates this film, we're probably not going to try it again. But you know, if everybody likes it and the information keeps coming in, then I don't see why we wouldn't. We had a pretty good time doing it, I think.
Oh, they're going to like it. Trust me, they're going to like it.
They're going to enjoy it.
Are there other spots that you were thinking of traveling to? I mean, you guys are like documentary filmmakers now, not just podcasters. So like
documentarians, if you will.
Are there other areas you guys are interested in investigating?
Well, someplace cooler, I think, definitely on our list.
We'll go back up into the mountains, I think.
Yeah. Or Caribbean, maybe someplace with some nice water that we can enjoy. Honestly, no. I mean, we just sort of stumbled upon this. It wasn't like that we were, you know, we knew something other people didn't know. It's just sort of right place, right time. So, you know, we have our eyes open. If something else, you know, pops up like that, we'll certainly be one of the first people on it. But as of right now, there's nothing on my radar.
I've got a quick one because I've been thinking about this ever since watching it and the whole thing. And I keep forgetting to ask you guys. And it just hit me again, like, oh, I've got to ask them this time. There's been cold spots found while out there in the desert doing a little looking around. Have you ever talked to anyone? Like, how do they explain that? Like, what is the scientific explanation given for something that can do that in a desert? Because if there's anything that doesn't seem normal and scientifically easily explained away would be a significant cold spot in the desert. Now, I understand at the bottom of the draws and down in the bottoms of the valleys, colder air will settle down there. But this isn't the cold air that we're talking about. Like, you're speaking of it being in the 90s that late. And then all of a sudden there is a very significant bubble of cold air in a certain area. Was there any explanations that they tried to give you all for that?
I don't think we seeked anything like that. It was just sort of an anomaly that we noted and then sort of moved on due to our schedule. But it was really weird. It was 95, 96, something like that outside. And the area in and around the Key Well, which now doesn't have water in it, it's bone dry. And it's only at best
maybe filled in, too.
It's filled in, yeah. It's a foot or two deeper than where else you're standing. It's not really that deep of an impression.
Little divot kind of thing.
Small bowl. But it was 73, 70, something like that. I can't remember the numbers. But it was a drastic difference. And I don't know the answer. There's a lot of rumors of underground cavern systems that go up and down the mountains through there. I don't know if maybe that would have something to do with it. That could explain how water would get to that point if it was some sort of underground aquifer. But unless David figured it out and didn't tell me, I don't think we know.
No, we just basically speculated, like, while we were there, that maybe it was a place that the cold air could sink into. It was a little bit lower than everything around it, but it wasn't much lower.
No, it really wasn't.
That's just something I kept thinking about when you saw it, because there's no plausible explanation that can be easily given to be like, that's what caused that. And I can go show you in another valley or another spot that it will do it just the exact same way. That doesn't really happen. It's not like when y'all were out there, y'all weren't just blindly stumbling across cold spots every time you went through dips or went by anything, nothing like that. And that's just one of those deals that I just, when you brought up the well, I'm like, that's a very disturbing thing that I'm like, what is going on there?
I'm not sure who we would even check with. Derek, do you have any thoughts on like who would,
geologists who could tell us?
And here's the thing. We asked several geologists. We got a great one. Finally, someone said, yes, they'd talk to us. But we asked several geologists, neither didn't hear back. Or we'd hear back and they were like, what are you doing? We're like, well, we're trying to like scientifically look for explanations to things like ghosts, you know, and they're like, they literally ghosted us. So people are reticent to talk about stuff like this. And I think it's funny because I'm like, you have a platform to give the scientific explanation and not just like say, oh, that's stupid. You know, nobody believes that, or it's superstition or whatever, or just, you know, who cares? It's like, if you can explain it, you know, like that's what we're here for. Yeah. We're trying to get to the bottom of this stuff. So, that was kind of frustrating when we were putting it together and trying to find people to talk to, but I would be more than happy to, you know, if somebody knows how that stuff works, we'd love to talk to them for future endeavors.
That's just one of those things. Like I said, it just stuck with me. Is the cold spot thing around homes. So I could kind of get that. But when you're out there in the desert and find it, I'm just like, that just throws me every time. I'm like, man, that doesn't make any sense.
Did you guys see any giant birds at all while you were out there?
Just of the military variety.
Yeah. Apaches.
I was just wondering, because I've read stories in that area of like thunderbirds, giant, you know, winged creatures. I was wondering, I know there was none in the documentary, but I was just wondering personally while you were out there camping under the stars, if you saw anything. Huh.
You know, that's funny. I didn't even think about the Thunderbird legend. I don't recall anything like that being reported out there. A lot of it's on the ground, or if it's in the air, it's these lights or UFOs or the, like we said, the military.
I got you.
Yeah. Interesting. I'll have to look out for that though. Does a giant spider. We did get a report of a giant spider.
Oh, that count me out.
Kyle's done.
I hate spiders.
He'll never show up. He'll never show up. Does it seem more orb activity? Did you see any of that stuff increase while y'all were present?
Well, we didn't see it.
yeah.
Well, we saw all kinds of stuff. We don't know what
there's
it was.
There's a lot.
The sky is alive at night out there, whether it's, you know, the military again, or if it's just normal stuff or paranormal stuff. I don't know, but there's all kinds of stuff in the sky at night.
And it's so dark. There's no light pollution. You're getting to see all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. It's a night sky community. Down
dark
there.
Sky.
Dark
some,
sky.
There you makes go. You wonder some things might take advantage of light pollution.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would make a lot of sense. It's a good place to hide where it's, you know, darker than everywhere else.
It's a good place to hide, but scary. Go ahead, Dave.
There's a lot of military bases around there, so we did see a lot of military aircraft, and at night we could tell, you know, there's some big transport choppers flying by. A lot of them will go in pairs across the sky. We saw plenty of planes, we saw satellites, and sometimes there'd be, you know, something that's not blinking, it's not moving like a satellite. It was weird, and like Derek said earlier, we didn't have great equipment for night stuff, or else we probably would have done a UFO watch and included that in the film as well.
Right.
But yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in the sky.
There's part two.
Yeah, it is.
This continues.
It's just a weird area, and I'm glad that you guys like you are the ones that covered it. It's amazing. Everybody out there who has an interest in the unknown, the paranormal, you need to mark your calendars for March 5th. That's when it's going to be available on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, and other places. It's Shadows in the Desert, High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle, coming to you and crafted by the minds of Monsters Among Us and Blurry Photos Podcast. There couldn't have been two better guys to do the documentary. It's amazing. I loved it. Big kudos to you. I hope you guys make many more films.
I love the film poster too, by the way.
Yeah, okay. Artwork is cool.
The
artwork
is knocked that out of the park.
Great.
Yeah. Loved it.
I need a poster. Y'all got posters? I'm getting a poster.
Oh yeah.
I'm getting a poster for here.
You guys were backers. You helped us make this. So yeah, you're getting a poster.
I need a poster.
Nice.
I got a box in the next room headed your way.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Well, tell everybody how to follow you guys on your podcast, as well as anything else you want to promote.
Well, you can find me every Thursday, anywhere you find a fine podcast and crappy ones like mine. it's a call-in show about monsters. It's not crappy. It's a great show.
No, it's great.
It's a call-in show about monsters. I don't want to sell.
Unsettling is what that show is.
Unsettling. That's
unsettling.
The word. Anyway, so it's a call-in show about monsters. Call in, leave your story. We'll discuss it there, and we play some pretty crazy stuff there.
Yeah, and you can find Blurry Photos in the same places. I release episodes whenever I'm done researching a topic, so that it can be a while between episodes nowadays. But you can hear me more regularly on Hysteria 51, which I co-host with Brent Hand, and we handle these topics with sense of humor, and we don't take it quite so seriously. And if you like trivia, check out Quiz Quiz Bang Bang. It's just straight up trivia. It's nothing to do with the paranormal. So if you like audiobooks, just look for my name, David Flora, on Amazon, Audible, whatever. And I have a few audiobooks on there, written by Tom Lyons, who writes a lot of stuff about Bigfoot and things like that.
Nice.
That's awesome. Well, David and Derek, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thank you so much for doing the film. It's amazing. We can't wait to have you on again.
We really appreciate
guys.
It. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Great talk to you.
Back with Expanded Perspectives. Very cool documentary. I strongly suggest you guys go over there on March 5th and download that. I think you and your family will enjoy it. It's bizarre. And I love talking to David and Derek. Those guys are great. If you're not familiar with their podcast, they're really good. David, back in the day especially, he's like us. He approaches the paranormal, but like in a comedic fashion.
Yes.
So it's kind of funny the way his delivery is just fantastic. And Derek, his show is pretty cool because it's all like listener-based stories. People call in and tell their strange encounters.
Unsettling.
Very unsettling. It's very cool. Both those guys are amazing at what they do. Cam, you said you had something that was a little spooky you wanted to tell everybody about.
Before we dove into the interview, you and I were talking. He had brought up with the Bigfoot breaking into the cabin. This is one that I've had that I wanted to talk to you about because this is something that I could truly see Bigfoot doing. Like this is, you know, like we've talked about, would Bigfoot really do this? You know, because Kyle and I have all kinds of crazy discussions off air about things that Bigfoot would do and could or couldn't do. And if he could live in the cities now, you could see Bigfoot in a suit or
like, WWBD wristband on.
Yeah, yeah. What would Bigfoot do? Yeah, it's all these crazy things. But this is something that I could really see Bigfoot doing, and also would see how it just all flows together. See how terrifying it would be. This is what it says. It says, I'm in South Florida now, but I spent most of my life in Pennsylvania. And we were at an out-of-the-way area along Raystown Lake in Huntingdon County. And we were just going out camping at the time. It says here, not even looking for Bigfoot. Okay? And this was in the spring of 2022. I didn't even know there was a Bigfoot. So we were out looking for firewood, messing around, and it was about 2 a.m. So it says here, long story short, we saw this creature, and this creature was down in the water moving its hands around like people that try to catch catfish with their hands. Now, it's called noodling, and it looked like that's exactly what this thing was doing. And it wasn't like a normal movement. It says at first, we just thought it was a person. But where this creature was standing was a real, like, soft, mucky bottom, and it was in a backwater area. So said it's early morning. They're down there. They see this thing. Said it's about 4 foot deep in the water, or the water's about 4 foot deep. It goes, well, at least that's what they thought. It goes all the way down till its nostrils are just barely out of the water, and then just sat there for about 2 to 3 minutes moving its hands around. Then it would stand up. And it would move a little further down, go down, do the same thing. Says soon we realized it wasn't a person. So I made my way down closer to the water's edge to try to get a better look. And this thing stood up. When it stood up, it was massive. At that moment, I could tell that this was no man, built like a man. I couldn't see distinct details, but so large that this was no human being. This thing was huge. Said I strained trying to get a better look at it, squinting, and I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And it was probably only 40 foot from me. So I was crouched down, kind of hiding in some brush at the time. So I guess had stepped on a twig and cracked. This thing instantly headed out of the water, probably 30 foot from shore in that mud and muck and about 4 foot of water that you would normally strain in. Said this thing moved like a bird skimming across the water instantly. Two big steps and it burst like out of it. Just boom, boom, crushing is what this thing explains as it busts out of the water. Said when it reached the shore, it quickly ran into the forest. And as it moved by, it looked like it had a catfish in each hand.
Wow.
That's what this person caught him doing.
You know, that noodling stuff, I would never do that, but they do that around here and especially up in Oklahoma. Oh, like
crazy. Yeah.
I've had too many experiences with like alligator snapping turtles that I wouldn't want to stick my hand in those holes.
I just don't want to have any part of it.
I like catfishing, but I like to use a fishing pole. What's wrong with a fishing pole, right?
But that does that not sound like something that you could see Bigfoot doing?
Sure.
I never thought about that. Like, you know, you would never think like, oh, I guess maybe wonder if Bigfoot would catch fish like a bear. Like catch them as they're spawning, trying to jump up, and you're grabbing them.
Yeah, the bear
like
uses
that.
Its face, though. See, yes. The Sasquatch, it'd be hard to do with their hand. But noodling.
Noodling is exactly right. It would be something easy to grab. But here's my question. Where did they learn to do it?
I don't know.
How did they learn that there's catfish in that water? And then how do they know that, where do they go to den up, right, to have the catfish babies? How do they know it lives in there? How do they know to put their hand in there and grab it? Like, who taught them that?
Well, this is...
Or are they the ones that know, and somewhere down the line they taught us?
Yeah, it could be. That's why, you know, there's some people that think that Sasquatch is a ape-like creature, and other people think it's like another humanoid. So it's like way far until it's not quite Homo sapien, but somewhere I'm the missing link, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so perhaps they're far smarter than we realize them. They must be, because you would find them more often. So maybe they're really intelligent. Maybe they're smarter than us.
And we've heard numerous tales of people spotting Bigfoot, not only like in the water, but by the edge of the water, whether it's collecting freshwater, what do they say? It's like freshwater clams or mussels, or they're collecting. You can't really tell what they're grabbing out of the water. Maybe they're cleaning things. Like, so the interaction would be there, but the idea of it waiting out there and grab, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, me too.
I love the idea of it. Just the whole visual of, if I were an artist, I would draw something as such. And here's another thing. Remember that footage? I think it come from Florida. I'm almost positive. Where those people were filming and it zooms in and what they said was a Bigfoot. You could see its back and it's down there. Looks like all these cypress trees and it's all down in the water.
Digging for clams or something.
There you go. It's the same thing. It's working in there when tide comes out or whatnot. It's out there messing around.
That would make sense.
Yeah. So I don't know. It that's one of those stories that I'm just instantly like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, right? Noodling, scallop collecting, things like that. Why wouldn't it know how to do that?
Yes. Yeah, hunter and a gatherer.
I mean, that's what humans did for a long time. You always lived around the shorelines because, you know, tide gets low.
Easy place to find food.
Stuff to pick up, stuff to eat. Yep. Very, very cool. Well, if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, as well as the listeners, you can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-BRUD. That's 888-393-2783. On March 5th, go over and stream Shadows in the Desert, High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle. I think you'll enjoy it. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Man, oh man, I don't really know. Probably whatever I'm told to do by the family, but this weekend I'm going to get my granddaughter and we're going to go get into some trouble somewhere.
That sounds good. I'll be doing more continuing education.
You need to. I mean, you're looking a little dumb.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I always look like that. That's my normal face.
Oh.
But that's about it. I hope everybody out there has a good one. Till next time, folks, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.